Good morning. As people continue to gather, let's turn in the purple book, Seeing the Story, to number one. Praising God who breaks the darkness with a liberating light. Let's stand for this one.
Bum, bum, bum. Praise the one who breaks the darkness with a
wonderful to be gathered this morning during Centennial Homecoming Weekend and Week. We started on Wednesday with a chapel and some other events, and then today we've filled the house. It's marvelous to have so many friends, community members, alumni, faculty, staff, and students gathered. As you came in this morning, you, or some of you, would have heard some music playing, and that was the university hymn. And it's going to be referenced in the talk from John and Michelle. And you might not be able to read the words of the hymn as they're projected here. We're not singing it today, but you can find it in the back of the blue hymnal, slip it out and look at it at that time, and then do me a huge favor and slip it back in before you leave, please. Also, for students who have been accustomed to swiping in for chapel credit, today we're doing that as you leave chapel. And that may be the practice for the next several weeks as well. Thank you. Our focus today is changing the world one life at a time. John and Michelle Sharp share reflections from the life and calling of their son, Michael J. or M.J. Sharp, recipient this weekend of the 2017 EMU Life Service Award. MJ was killed while on a United Nations peacemaking mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo in March 2017. A bit about John and Michelle, but just a bit. John Sharp teaches history and Bible at Heston College. He's a storyteller and author. And among his books are these: A School on the Prairie, A Centennial History of Heston College, My Calling to Fulfill, The Ori O. Miller Story, and most recently, The Bible as Story, An Introduction to Biblical Literature, written with colleagues Marion Bontrager and Michelle Hirschberger, both faculty members at Heston College as well. Michelle Miller Sharp launched her career in education and moved into the medical field, working in family practice for the past 20 years as a physician assistant, and more recently in clinic administration as director of clinical excellence. John and Michelle our parents of two daughters, Erin and Laura, and their son, MJ, as well as the grandparents of three absolutely adorable grandchildren, Oscar, Lucy, and Jesse. I didn't introduce myself, and allow me to do that now as well. Brian Martin Burkholder, University Campus Pastor and Director of Campus Ministries. And I've gotten to know John and Michelle through the years. We used to be in the same area of northern Indiana and interact around programming at Amigo Center. And it was an honor to represent EMU at the memorial service in Heston for MJ Sharp. And it's an honor to host you this morning to open the story for us to encounter together. Let's warmly welcome John and Michelle.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the privilege of spending this time together with you. You students are in a wonderful laboratory of learning that may shape your future and define your life mission. We suspect you are preparing to change the world, each in your own unique way. We applaud you, but how do you change the world?
If we may, we'd like to share a few things about our son, Michael Sharp, better known as MJ, who was abducted and assassinated 7 months ago. This happened while he was working to bring peace to the largest country in Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo. Perhaps his story will inspire you. We say he died as he lived, fully engaged. He lived with passion, wit. He was intellectually curious, yet a soft heart. He was a creative problem solver. And he was a good-hearted prankster.
He's still known at his high school in Goshen, Indiana. He's still known at his high school in Goshen, Indiana, for the time he rewired the school bell to his locker so that he could set it off when he pleased. Finally, when specialists were called in, but they too were unable to figure out why the system was misfiring, then the administration started discussing the need to replace the system at a cost of $25,000. The jig was up, but not completely over. MJ approached the head of maintenance and explained to him how the system could be fixed. And if so, would he have to tell that he was the prankster? We believe that one of the great disappointments of MJ's 4 years here at EMU was the foiling of a creative editing of a newly commissioned university hymn that was discovered too soon.
Here's how it happened. The hymn was to premiere on homecoming weekend 2003. There was great excitement among the administrators. After all, how often does the university commission a hymn that is to capture its mission? As it turned out, MJ and his roommate Jason Garber were also eagerly anticipating the introduction of the hymn, but for a different reason. On the night before its premiere, MJ and Jason were inspired to alter the text, only slightly, and with a humorous twist that students would enjoy. Administrators, not so much.
Okay, what we've decided is that, in case you can't see all the text, but now you would have reference to it in the back of your hymnals, but we're just going to read...
Can I read this paragraph?
Of course.
Thank you.
I went too soon.
So, the story continues. We can't let you hang there. So MJ packed all the copies of the hymns, neatly stacked at the end of each pew here, into his backpack. went back to their room, and they got to work. They downloaded a musical scale editing program and painstakingly reproduced the hymn. Then they made a few revisions. Both versions are on the screen.
All right, so the original copy was to be Jesus, our teacher friend. But in the revision, it became
Jesus, our t-shirt friend.
Can you imagine singing this? Jesus, our wine and bread became
Jesus, our wine in bed.
To heal the wealthy and the weak became
to heal the healthy in a week.
And finally, although there are more, Jesus, our light, our all.
Became Jesus, our light, that's all.
Janet Stutzman, director of alumni services at the time and responsible for this big event, had this to say, quote, "Too bad for them that we discovered it just in time to run off copies of the correct script and replace them in the pews. Patience Kamau, a staff member, is still a bit sorry that the prank was discovered. I, however, was immensely relieved since this was a big deal."
So, Janet, where are you?
She's here somewhere.
Over there.
Okay.
Did you really mean to spoil MJ's prank? Or maybe the question is, did you have to replace it? With this disappointment and graduation behind him, MJ volunteered to work with the Military Counseling Network, a program of the German Mennonite Peace Committee in Baumenthal, Germany. When American soldiers stationed in Germany had transformative experiences on the battlefield and became conscientious objectors, he guided them through the very complex process of getting a conscientious objector discharge. During these years, MJ walked with the soldiers as they dealt with PTSD, long before the military acknowledged it was a problem. He listened to their battle experiences and their transforming stories. And he supported them once they had made the decision to apply for a CO status, but were still obligated to continue serving in their military company.
During these 3 years, he learned much about the military mentality, about guns and ammunition, and the psychology of war. He was invited onto the base to play poker with the soldiers, and was even invited back when he repeatedly won and walked away with their money.
He did that here too, by the way.
Many of the relationships he formed with these soldiers continued for the rest of his life. During this time, however, his belief in nonviolent resolution to conflict grew and solidified and became his passion.
In 2010, he earned a master's degree in peace studies and conflict resolution from Philipps University in Marburg, Germany. During those years, he had numerous opportunities to work on peaceful reconciliation in areas of conflict, including Iraq, Afghanistan, and then Israel-Palestine with Christian peacemaker teams.
In 2012, MJ began serving with Mennonite Central Committee in the Democratic Republic of Congo in Central Africa. He fell in love with the people of Congo and the beautiful countryside that he called paradise. The reality is, however, that in the East Congo where he served, it is a place of great violence, suffering, and displacement of its people. He told one colleague, "I enjoy vacation and all, but I definitely miss being in Congo when I'm away. It feels like my life and identity are still there, whether I'm there or not. Really, Congo is my true love. His work with MCC included partnering with Congolese churches and organizations to bring relief to the people through agricultural programs and humanitarian services, providing basic supplies to the many persons forced to live in displacement camps.
But what captured his passion and became his personal mission was seeking out rebel groups, building relationships by listening with respect, even though they had done horrendous crimes. As he built relationships, he could offer other ways to meet their dreams and goals, of course, in nonviolent ways. These were the people who raided, raped, and killed with impunity. His experience was one of extremes. On one day, he might be sitting with victims of rape and helping to identify the body parts of their husbands and brothers scattered throughout the forest so the family could bury them.
A couple of days later, he might be, as a New York Times reporter put it, sitting under a banana tree, listening to a warlord's story. No matter who the enemy, MJ said, you can always listen. When we listen, we learn their narrative and their dreams. Only then can we offer another way to meet their goals non-violently. He rarely spoke to us about success, but rather about the mission. We now know that over the course of a few years, he and his colleagues negotiated the release of many child soldiers and persuaded over 1,600 rebel soldiers to lay down their weapons. Consequently, thousands of their family members left their harsh living conditions in the jungle and went home. A colleague also told us that every time they met with a warlord, some combatants and families followed them out of the forest. For over a year, MJ and his colleagues maintained contact with the notoriously violent militia group with Rwandan roots known as the FDLR. They listened, they built trust, and they offered another way for this group to meet their goals other than through violence. And then one day, it happened. They walked out of the forest that had been their home for over 20 years. They gave up the fight through violence, surrendered their guns, and with their families were safely repatriated to their home country.
The video clip that you're about to see begins with families leaving the forest because their fathers and husbands had laid down their weapons, and they're climbing into vans to go back home. Then later you'll see a clip of MJ and his team who negotiated with this militia group to have them lay down their arms and to help them be repatriated.
Oh, Bonjour, monsieur. Nous voulons avoir vos impressions si ce que vous venez de voir.
Alors, je suis venu avec l'équipe de réconciliation. Nous sommes montés ici. Nous avons pris peut-être 2 heures. Et nous avons eu une réunion très bien avec quelques officiers de l'intérieur pour parler de la situation et la possibilité, sur les possibilités pour rétablir les combattants et les dépendants de l'intérieur pour retourner au Rwanda. C'était bon d'avoir la chance de parler avec ces officiers pour voir comment ils voient la situation, comment on peut en fait travailler ensemble pour aider les gens pour retourner au Rwanda.
The demobilization ceremonies were formal and scripted. Because he was known for his knowledge of militia groups and the contacts he nurtured with them, the United Nations invited him to become an armed group expert. In this role, he and his 5 group of experts colleagues investigated the root causes of the ongoing conflict. They reported their findings to the UN Security Council, and could choose to impose sanctions on the offenders. In his second term, he became the coordinator of the group of experts for a continued mission in Congo.
A colleague, Emily Seralta, told us about her first meeting with MJ. I met him in 2014. I was the armed group experts on the UN group of experts at the time. I had been the coordinator of that group the previous year. Upon meeting Michael, I was struck by how fast he talked and thought, by his knowledge about the FDLR, which he knew inside and out, and by his friendliness. It was clear that MJ wanted to be on the group of experts. Many people want to do this job, but many people have the qualities required. Michael had so many of these qualities. He was intelligent and knowledgeable, passionate and hardworking, to mention only a few. Kindness is not a requisite for this job, she said, but Michael had kindness and warmth aplenty. Ultimately, he took over the job I had been doing, and the second year became the coordinator of the group.
On the morning of March 13, we were informed that MJ and his colleague Zaida Catalan had not returned from their mission the day before. The efforts of UNPOL, UN police, were not helpful, could not find them, but they were leading the search for them. For 2 weeks, we lived on our devices, grasping every bit of news. We were in daily contact with the United Nations for updates on the search, and the FBI came to our home often to support our family and to give us updates. To our family, by that time, they were all gathered in our home in Kansas. Then we learned his body and that of his colleague were found in a shallow grave. Their abductors had shot and killed them. We don't know why yet. Our hearts are broken. The pain of his loss is still beyond words. So our grieving and tears continue. We miss him terribly. We wish he would come home.
At the same time, we are grateful that in his short life of 34 years, God used MJ's keen mind, his kind heart, and his purposeful intensity to make a difference in the lives of so many people. He valued all people, as Jesus calls us to do. He listened. He offered alternative means for resolution and reconciliation without violence. Was his work dangerous? Sometimes it was. But the mission was his focus, and he was determined to give it his all. He acknowledged the danger. Although he had no death wish, he also told us he wasn't afraid to die. His lack of fear, his readiness to listen, and his creative problem solving made the difference.
We leave you with a question. How will you change the world? You don't have to go to Africa to make a difference. But then again, as you develop the gifts God has given you and that you are nurturing, be open to how and where God will use you. Use you to bring peace and reconciliation in a divided country and hurting world.
Early in MJ's service time with MCC, he sent me a photo with a very short message. It simply read, "Mom, today I convinced this little girl's parents to not marry her off because I had funds to send her to school. One life at a time."
Our challenge to you again, discover your gifts, and then choose a peacemaking career and live it with passion and change the world one life at a time.
Thank you, John and Michelle, for joining us this morning. Thank you for allowing us to celebrate MJ's life. And thank you for inviting us to join you in that sacred space of mourning the loss of a young life so passionate about peace and justice that he was willing to walk into places of danger to be an agent of change. May we all carry that with us and be willing to be agents of change. My name is Louise Otto Hostetter, class of 1979. I had the privilege of chairing the Centennial Committee for the last several years, and we are delighted to have you all here to celebrate 100 years of history and anticipate another 100 years. As you know, we have many, many activities planned for the weekend. It's a weekend of choices, opportunities, and I'm not going to take the time to go over any of the activities, but I do want to encourage you to make a beeline for the registration. If you have not been there, to pick up your packets and your tickets, you will need them for some of the activities we are offering. Today we have book signings, bike rides, more book signings, President's Forum on main stage, more book signings. At 4 o'clock, there's a Centennial Art Show, and at 8 o'clock, we have Centennial Theater. It's all good stuff. But the background for all of that is that we're here, we're together. It's an opportunity to renew old friendships and to make new friends. And I'm very happy that we are here in spite of what weather reports say for today. It's a time of warmth and sunshine, in my opinion. I also have the honor this morning of introducing Don Krabill, who is the author of our centennial book, Eastern Mennonite University, A Century of Countercultural Education. Don is a 1967 graduate from EMU with a double major in sociology and Bible. He holds an MA and PhD in sociology from Temple University and served on the EMU Board of Trustees from 1986 to 1995. He is internationally recognized for his scholarship on Anabaptist groups. Don is the author or editor of many books and dozens of professional articles. His books have been translated into 8 languages. His research featured in various media around the world, and his expertise sought on hundreds of projects related to Amish and other Anabaptist groups. He taught sociology and directed the Young Center for Anabaptist and Pietist Studies at Elizabethtown College, from which he retired in 2016. He also served as provost of Messiah College from 1996 to 2002. Don is married to Frances Mellinger Krabill, and they have 2 adult daughters and 2 grandchildren. Please join me in welcoming Don Krabill.
Thank you very much, Louise. It's been my honor to have been invited to write centennial history. And as you read that story, I think you'll see my interests in both sociology and Bible coming together as I explored a lot of those themes. It was a fascinating story, and I thoroughly enjoyed working with it. Although my name is on the cover, it was really a team effort. There were many people here at the university that helped. We have a wonderful archives here. And there are thousands and thousands of documents, and I want to recognize 3 people in particular this morning who spent as much time as I did on the book down here identifying sources and preparing them for my use. I'm going to say a little word about each of them, and then I'll have them stand and invite you to thank them. Nate Yoder, archivist, was extremely helpful in identifying sources for me. He also wrote short summaries of topics that I didn't know much about, essays on fundamentalism, what is Calvinism, and why did George Brunk feel so strongly against Calvinism, and so on. And his short little essays were wonderful assistance to me. Simone Horst, director of the Historical Library, was also very helpful in the whole process, gathering things, making copies, and directing me to various sources, which were also very valuable. And then I also want to recognize Thane Hostetler, a student who for 2 summers worked on the project under the direction of Simone and Nate. And I remember one day I said to Nate, I wish I could find this poem. There was a poem in the 1930s that a faculty member here wrote against Goshen College and was reading this in their classes. And Harold Bender at Goshen College was quite annoyed about this and wrote to A.D. Wanger, the president at that time, saying that Bender would like a copy of this poem. And I have A.D.'s letter back, and A.D. said, we destroyed it, and unfortunately I can't send it to you. And I was just expressing my regrets to Nate. I just wish I had this poem to know what it was like. It's 7 verses long, and Thane happened to be there at morning. He said, Thane, why don't you see if you could find it? Maybe you can find a copy of it. And lo and behold, the next morning, Thane comes out with this box, a big smile on his face. He found the original copy. So... It's in the book, three verses of it. Why you shouldn't go to Goshen College. So, Nate, where are Nate? If you would stand, and Simone and Thane, and would you join me in thanking them for their great effort?